It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and Fan Rag Sports. And I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who has covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports. And you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13. Just a reminder, today's show is sponsored by Draft. Use the promo code LOHEAT and get a free entry after you make your first deposit. And check out our Twitter account at LockedOnHeat for instructions on how to join our league and play against us during tonight's games.
We are here recording on a Tuesday night following the Miami Heat's loss to the Toronto Raptors. We're going to get to your Twitter questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat and then our spotlight performances later on. But a late push by the Heat falls short. The Heat were down by as many as 17 points, but scored 13 straight in the fourth quarter to cut Toronto's lead to 112 to 109 with about a minute to go. But it was too little too late for Miami. They missed a pair of threes. Following that, the Raptors hit just enough of their free throws to keep the Heat at arm's distance for the rest of the game in Miami. A valiant effort for them, but ultimately it ends up in their sixth loss in seven games.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it in our preview of the game earlier today. You know, Toronto is a very good team, very deep team. I do have to admit that Miami was impressive for most of the first three quarters where they were really able to keep pace with them. You know, again, after a number of days off, they were fully rested. They seemed like they were engaged. They had some really nice moments early on. The third quarter in particular, Goran Dragic, who we'll talk about more later on the show, was particularly electric. He just seemed like he was unstoppable. And there was some nice play in general, but then there was just this weird collapse there where they couldn't get a shot off. They couldn't find the right shots. They kept turning the ball over. They looked really sloppy and disorganized on defense. And Toronto, to their credit, really were able to capitalize. And I think that was the difference. Unfortunately, Miami had, like as you said, a valiant comeback effort. It ultimately fell short.
I mean, Toronto went on that big run, a 21-4 run.
Yeah.
After Goran Dragic left in the third quarter and Dwayne Wade came in. And I don't want to fault Dwayne Wade for it. It was really just because Goran Dragic was keeping that team afloat. He had such a great game. And like you said, we'll talk about him later in our spotlight. But that's really when Toronto opened it up. And then DeMar DeRozan in particular, 19 points in the third quarter. He was just on fire. The Heat really didn't have an answer for Toronto's backcourt. DeRozan and Lowry combined for 49 points. And there's a number of things that I think went wrong that you could sort of pinpoint and blame for this loss ultimately. But I kind of want to go, before we get into all that sort of stuff, I want to just kind of get into the final minute of the game there, specifically the final real play of the game. The Raptors had an inbound play. They inbound it to Jonas Valanciunas. And instead of fouling, Bam Adebayo let Valanciunas get the ball to C.J. Miles, and then Goran Dragic had to foul C.J. Miles. And then you could see on the court Dragic kind of yelling at Bam, like, why didn't you foul him? And you'd think, like, yeah, of course you foul the seven-footer, but Valanciunas is actually an 82% free-throw shooter. Now, C.J. Miles is slightly better, but at 84%. Basically, they're both good free-throw shooters, yeah. Right? So you technically don't want to foul a good free throw shooter in that situation, but it did waste almost 3 seconds off the clock, which ended up being crucial because C.J. Miles hit the first free throw, missed the second free throw. Josh Richardson gets the defensive rebound after that missed free throw, and then he was able to get down the court and get a shot off. It ended up hitting the back of the iron and missing. But if you think that maybe if Miami has another 2 or so seconds left on the clock, they probably could have gotten a better shot. I mean, the Richardson shot ended up being sort of a heave from a few feet beyond the three-point line. He got a decent look for what it was, but they probably could have ran something better had they had a couple more seconds or gotten a better shot off if they had a couple more seconds on the shot clock. So that by not fouling there, it ended up being a rookie mistake by Bam Adebayo that I don't want to say cost him the game, but you never know.
Well, you can't. You know, that's the thing. It's never just one play, obviously. And I think he can't put all the weight of this loss on Bam's shoulders there. You know, he made a mistake. He wasn't thinking, and I'm not sure why. I'm not sure if either he just didn't understand the situation properly. Maybe he didn't know they needed to foul right away. Maybe Spoelstra didn't relay that to everybody. So it could have been a number of factors. I'm sure we'll probably get more information about it later on. Those extra couple of seconds, I think, would undoubtedly have made a difference because, honestly, Richardson just looked like he was immediately pushing that ball up court right after the rebound. He didn't have much time to kind of gather himself. And rewatching that play unfold a couple of times in replay, you notice that there are other players there that probably were better equipped to take a shot. Ellington had run down court immediately. He was way past Richardson. And it probably would have led to a turnover if they had tried to find Ellington down court. Dragic, however, was a little bit more wide open and shooting the way he had been, probably in a better place to actually wind up taking that last second shot. But Richardson, feeling the pressure of the expiring shot clock, had to put up that shot as quickly as he did. Fortunately, rimmed out. I don't know that, again, you can't put it on any one play. You can't put it on Bam. It was a mistake. It didn't cost the game. It was one of many mistakes that took place throughout the game. They should never have allowed Toronto to build a 17-point lead in the first place, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you know, and it's just another one of those nights where the Heat just didn't have enough on offense to sort of get it done. Like I said, when Dragic left in that third quarter, I mean, when he was when he was playing in the third quarter, he was the only guy scoring for them. He scored at some point. He was like 16 of Miami's 20 points in the third quarter were all to Goran Dragic. He was creating everything there. It's just, you know, when guys like Josh Richardson aren't shooting well and Tyler Johnson's just not playing well in general, it's really hard, you know. And I know Dwayne Wade's back. And Wade actually, I thought, had an effective game. I thought that it was basically Wade and Goran Dragic were the two guys sort of leading the offense there. Miami's two point guards basically were the only ones doing anything offensively for the Heat. I mean, Wade didn't have as effective as a night shooting. I mean, he was only 4-9 for 10 points, but he did have 6 assists. He was getting guys involved. I don't know. It's just a tough game. But ultimately, look, you gotta go ahead.
Yeah, I know. I was gonna say. I know the effort is something that everybody's going to look to and applaud, but it really feels like an empty moral victory to me. Like I'm kind of sick of it. Like if this team wants to be convinced that they are a legitimate contender, they need to pull out these games. And this recent stretch of losing 6 of their last 7 games is it's just too much. Like they need to realize now if they're in the 8th seed, they were, you know, a few weeks ago, they were competing within a half game of Cleveland for the 3rd seed in the Eastern Conference. And they've slipped all the way to 8th. This can't happen. Like, if this is a team that wants to see themselves make it and at least into the second round of the playoffs, make the playoffs at this point, which is definitely in jeopardy, they need to pull out these victories. And understand that Toronto is a very difficult challenge. They're a tough team regardless. They had Kyle Lowry going at full steam today and DeMar DeRozan in particular, who led all score, or I guess he led all Toronto scores. But he, you know, they need to do better against opponents like this, and it's just.
And I think if you're locked on Raptors tonight, you're talking about how you just sort of let your foot off the gas right in that fourth quarter,
right?
Because Miami outscored Toronto 31-17 in that final period. So I think maybe it was close, but it's a little. The difference in the game, like you said, was that third quarter when they just sort of let that thing slip away when nobody outside of Goran Dragic could score. We're going to talk about some of Miami's issues when we get to our Twitter questions next. But first, a lot of you already play fantasy basketball or daily fantasy. And if you're one of those people, we highly suggest that you check out Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but it's not like the other guys. If you're like me, your favorite part of playing fantasy is the draft. Unfortunately, you only get to draft once in your season-long leagues, and traditional daily fantasy is dominated by pros, and they can game the system. That's not the case with Draft. On Draft, you play real-life snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long league.
Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night, and there's no management involved. Just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. Drafts start every couple of minutes, so you can join one right now. And the best part, you get to play for cold, hard cash. Who doesn't love that? Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everybody, no matter what your spending limits might be. No salary caps. You play in a real-life snake draft, just like you play with your friends in a season-long league.
So come and join us on Draft today. Check out our Twitter account, and you can find a link to play against us in tonight's slate of games, or just search for Locked On Heat in the app. Download the app anytime. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes, or play right from your computer on draft.com, whatever you want.
For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use our promo code LOHEAT. That's LOHEAT. Go to Draft, use the promo code LOHEAT, and play with us tonight for free.
We've got our spotlight performances coming up later on, but let's go to Twitter and check out your questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHEAT. Let's start here with Dakota, who tweets in, why do we turn the ball over so damn much? Great question. I think Dakota obviously referring to Miami's difference in points off of turnovers against the Raptors. Toronto scored 28 points off of turnovers. Miami scored just 9. That's a 19-point swing. That's not good. Miami turned the ball over 16 times compared to just 8 for Toronto. Now, maybe some of that has to do with, okay, you're a team playing on the road a little bit, but turning the ball over twice as many times as your opponent, you're going to be hard-pressed to win a game that way.
It just seems like Miami is a little too opportunistic. I have to admit, I think a lot of it falls on Hassan Whiteside, to be honest with you. And I know that we look to him very frequently and blame him for a lot of Miami's problems, but there are just moments there where he just seems like he's completely engaged. There was a time there where he corralled a rebound, and Kyle Lowry, all of 6 feet, managed to wrench it right out of Hassan Whiteside's hands. Looked particularly bad there. And I think there are just other instances like that where he doesn't seem fully engaged. I think a play to start off the game started off with a Whiteside turnover too, where he just wasn't paying attention in the pass, kind of just sailed right past him. You know, there have been injury issues, so I think there's going to be an inconsistency there, a rhythm that hasn't quite formed. And it isn't going to form, to be honest with you, probably not until the All-Star break, when everybody, I think, will probably be at full strength. Dwayne Wade's insertion changes things. There was a play there at one point where James Johnson was curling around the baseline, kind of shuttled the pass to Dwayne Wade and sailed right past him into the stands because Wade wasn't expecting it. There's just a lack of familiarity there. And look, Johnson in particular, you know, he took a lot of chances with his passes earlier in the season. I think that's been under control for the most part over the last couple of weeks. So I don't think he's entirely to blame, but he does take chances with passes. And that, you know, I think it's just this general lack of familiarity with one another. It's going to lead to a lot of turnovers.
Yeah, you know, this turnover thing isn't new for Miami. They're right now 21st in the NBA at 15 turnovers a game. Toronto, they're one of the best. They have the best record in the Eastern Conference, and one of the reasons why they have that is because they're one of the best teams in the league and just taking care of the ball. They're fifth in the league. They've given up the fifth fewest turnovers in the league at 13.3. Now, look, that's not a huge difference. That's only like a 1.7 turnover per game difference. But again, if you're Miami and you turn the ball over in that game twice as much as Toronto, a team that typically takes care of the ball and does a good job of it on balance for the entire season, you're just not going to win that way, especially when you're allowing so many points off turnovers like they did. They weren't doing a great job getting back in transition. Give credit to the Raptors. They were doing a great job getting out and running after turnovers. This is a team that is quite obviously practiced at doing that, scoring off of turnovers. Again, one of the reasons why they have the best record in the conference. So, you know, I wonder if Dwayne Wade will eventually help that, to have a true backup point guard, you know, that role Dwayne Wade is sort of filling in there. I think you mentioned, I think he had four turnovers tonight. I wonder, you know, as he gets more time with these guys and gets more of a cadence with guys like James Johnson and Wayne Ellington and things like that, guys who he's going to need to feed the ball a lot to, I wonder if Miami's turnover percentage improves, but we'll have to wait and see. Let's get to our next Twitter question here. Jeff tweets in, is Babs going to have even a marginal role going forward?
He's not talking about Barbara Streisand. He's talking about Luke Babbitt, right?
That's a good assumption. I think we can make that assumption, yeah. But either way, Barbara Streisand and Luke Babbitt have logged the same amount of minutes for the Heat so far this season.
That's a good point. Is he even going to have a marginal role? You know what? It's hard to say. I don't think Spoelstra has made any kind of indication about Babbitt. I think a lot of the focus, and rightfully so, has been on Wade's return. But I think the problem is probably the same, in that Wade – you know, reported to the Heat, not in the kind of playing conditioning shape that they mm-hmm. appreciate. They want him to get into better shape. And I think Babbitt probably, you know, playing the spot minutes he did for a rebuilding Atlanta team, probably didn't come in great shape either. And moreover, I think you can play Wade because, well, it's Dwayne Wade and you kind of have to play him as soon as possible, but he can do more. Like Babbitt's going to come in there and play limited minutes as a shooter. I think if he's not going to be in the kind of right conditioning, then there's a good chance that he'll probably give up too many points on defense to and to counterbalance whatever offense he might be able to provide. So I don't know. I think eventually he will. You know, we've got the return of Kelly Olynyk. We've got Roddy Magruder waiting somewhere in the wings. So, I mean, there's a lot of players coming back that could change how Miami's rotation shapes up over the next couple of weeks. Oh, well, past the All-Star break anyway. And, you know, it's, whether or not Babbitt has a minute or two to play there remains to be seen. I expect that he would just because, well, he was a starter last year with pretty much the same roster. So I can't see why he wouldn't get some playing time.
But it was a different system. And you touched on that there with Dwayne Wade. I mean, he's a guard. He just has to run an offense. And you know, not to make that sound so simple, but it's basically going to be similar no matter what offense you're running. It's, you know, you're going to run some basic pick and roll. And that's and take your shots when they come to you, and that's going to be basically it. But for Luke Babbitt, I mean, this is it's the same roster almost, but a very different offense than last season, where last season was sort of predicated on that drive and kick, Dion and Goran Dragic getting into the lane and kicking out to Rodney Magruder and Luke Babbitt on the wing. But what the Heat are asking their stretch fours to do this season is so much different than what Babbitt was doing last season. I mean, Babbitt was just standing in a corner and waiting to get shots up. Now the Heat are asking their power forwards to get involved in playmaking. I mean, dribble handoffs all the time, reading defenses. They're not standing in the corner. They're standing on the elbow. It's a completely different offense for them. Now, maybe you could switch that up when Babbitt's in the game there. But that's probably Spoelstra needing to do that too. I mean, on the fly right now, he's had to integrate Wade and all these other and new rotations and all this substitution patterns and things like that. He's probably still figuring out how to integrate Luke Babbitt despite him being on the roster last season.
He did say that at one point he saw Babbitt at the arena practicing fake dribble handoffs, I think, and basically said, you know what, leave that stuff out of the arena. We don't want any of it here. You're here to shoot and just shoot. So he needs to figure out how he wants that kind of shooting in place. I mean, to be honest with you, like he could have been there for some – he could have played some minutes at some point tonight. If we needed – you know, if we needed shooting at some point during the game, he could have probably gotten a minute or two.
You could argue that the Heat did need that shooting. In that third quarter when Toronto opened up that run, I thought we'd see Babbitt. Does he come off the – does he play like just big Wayne Ellington minutes? Like that's the question. Do the Heat maybe – I'm surprised we haven't seen this more often, frankly, this season. I guess probably because they have so many centers that they're trying to play here. But, you know, do you play Babbitt and James Johnson together in the front court as a super small lineup, especially when you're down 17 points and you need to make a little bit of a run earlier? I think that could be an option. No, you allow James Johnson to be that playmaking big and then just let Luke Babbitt stand in the corner and shoot threes.
You know, I just thought of this right now, and you tell me if I'm way off base here, but – you know, obviously Babbitt's not the most fleet-footed player in the league. I wonder if a guy like Ellington, who's coming off so many screens and kind of always in motion there, whether or not like Babbitt might kill that kind of spacing for a little bit, like he might get in the way just because he's not quick enough to get out of the way. Yeah. I wonder if that's why it's been a challenge for Spoelstra to figure out how to kind of incorporate Babbitt and Ellington at the same time.
I think there's a number of things, and Spoelstra does have to figure it out, and he's got to figure out how to bring Babbitt in because they don't have anybody like Luke Babbitt right now. You know, and that's one of the reasons why you trade for Luke Babbitt, and it was a good deal. You know, you move a guy like O'Kara White, who hasn't played at all season, but they're going to have to figure out how to use him, and it's hard to do that right after the trade deadline, before the All-Star break, and on the road, no less. Yeah. Our next question comes from Dylan. He tweets in, should the Heat consider Derrick Rose? No, right? Like, just no. Like, we just got Dwayne Wade back. Can we just, like, not with more guards? Can we just not do this?
I mean, even if we hadn't gotten Dwayne Wade, I don't think there's any reason why Derrick Rose has anything of value. Like, Derrick Rose is not the player he once was. I mean, your personal feelings and my personal feelings about Rose are pretty negative, but those aside, I just don't think he's a good basketball player at this point. In fact, he might be a pretty downright bad basketball player His explosiveness is gone. He doesn't control the offense. He doesn't shoot particularly well. There's nothing that he does of value. We could use some scoring. He doesn't provide that. He has the ball in his hands too much. He doesn't give the ball up enough. He's just not going to fit into Miami's system and contribute at a high level. So, Dylan, thanks for asking, but no, buddy, we don't want him here.
Shout out to Dylan, too. He ended up taking it back, but we had to include it.
I'm curious if more people think that a guy like Derrick Rose, is it just the name recognition, the fact that he's a quote-unquote former MVP? It's like those years have passed. He is no longer that player that he was in Chicago in 2011.
There are casual fans, or maybe casual Cavalier fans, who probably think the Cavaliers got worse at the trade deadline because they let Wade and Derrick Rose go, two names that they know for guys that they've never heard of, like George Hill and Rodney Hood, you know?
It's very possible.
Look, Derrick Rose, if Tibbs doesn't end up picking him up in Minnesota, we might have seen the last of Derrick Rose, because I don't know who else. You're right. He's just not a good basketball player, and his on-off stats aren't positive for him. I mean, it's just, you know, I don't want to talk about Derrick Rose.
One can only hope he's done for good.
So it was he's got enough money from Adidas. He's fine. It was an awesome night for Goran Dragic. We're going to talk about that next in our spotlight. But a quick reminder to make sure that you're subscribed to Locked On Heat. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, as well as on Spotify.
Subscribing is the best way to support the show, or you can also hop onto our Patreon page. Another great way to support the show is to leave us a review on iTunes. It increases our ranking, helps other Heat fans discover the show, and just, you know, makes us feel good about ourselves. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Spotlight player time. You got one. I got one. David, you go first. Who's your spotlight player?
Well, you can't go anywhere other than Goran Dragic, to be honest with you, because he was the very best player in the game. 28 points to lead all scores, 16 of which came in the third quarter, finished 10 of 19 shooting, 3 of 5 from three-point range, got to the line six times. That's
should've
pretty
been
impressive for, like, probably. But, six is better than not. He looked very, very aggressive. I don't know if he kind of took the challenge of Kyle Lowry head on, another fellow all-star in the Eastern Conference. I'm curious why he felt like he was – he had a really bad game in Dwayne's return against Milwaukee on last Friday, so maybe he felt like he needed to bounce back. He certainly did that. For as much as this game was disappointing because it wound up in a loss, it wouldn't have been anywhere near close if not for Dragic's heroic performance. I mean, he was just simply wonderful. Got to the hoop, just looked like he was a step faster than everybody else. Mm-hmm. Lowry's a really, really good defender, and Dragic just seemed like he could – just blow right past him on his way to the hoop, and his shot was falling. He looked really confident doing so. He hoisted a couple 3-point shots, like I said, 3 of 5, finished also with 4 assists, 1 steal, just 2 rebounds. But, either way, he had a really, really positive game, I think.
The last 6 games for Goran Dragic, here are his scoring totals. You ready?
Not good.
28 points against Toronto, 6 yes. points against Milwaukee, 30 yes. points against Houston, 13 points against Orlando, 33 points against Detroit, 10 points against Philadelphia. February has been quite literally on-off for Goran Dragic. Off one game, on for the next game. We'll see if he has a better game against Philadelphia than he did in the first time these two teams met this month. But look, I don't know if it's his age at 31 years old and the wear and tear he's taken because of his physical style of play, but – he's not been the most consistent player this season. I mean, I think consistently he's done a good job of getting the Heat into their offense and doing things like that. But just from a scoring output, not consistent, right? And we'd be kidding ourselves if we said he was. Maybe it's just, at this point in his career, that's the best he's got. And look, if every other game he's having a good game, that's a lot better than a lot of players in this league. And you can do a lot with Goran Dragic. He is rightfully so an all-star, even if he got in because of injuries. But he played like an all-star tonight. He got downhill. He looked really fast coming off screens, controlled the tempo, controlled the game on offense. I thought he did a really good job. You just hope that he could sort of string more games like this along, or if he's not having 29, 30-point games all the time, at least when he's off, not being as off as he has been, instead of having 8 points, can you still have a iffy game but score 16 points. You know, those are what, like, I think the truly good play, great players in this league are able to do, even on their off nights. My spotlight player
that's of the just game too bizarre, is
what?
No, I was just gonna say it's just too bizarre that he should be one off, one on like that. Like, I mean, I've never seen anything like that before. I know it's a small sample size, and hopefully, again, he can change that against Philadelphia. Although that seems unlikely, considering the way Ben Simmons was able to guard him last time.
Yeah, that's a tough matchup for him.
Absolutely.
My spotlight player of the game is Bam Adebayo. Feel like we're saying his name in our spotlight section more and more lately, but 11 points on 3-6 shooting, 5 rebounds. My favorite part, 3 assists. Look, in a game in which he played over Whiteside to close the game, those are the reasons, those are the things that he can do that makes him playable at the end of games over a guy like Whiteside. We talked about Whiteside earlier and just how he's not really helping the offense. Bam Adebayo just helps the offense. If I'm going to simplify this thing, he helps his teammates on offense and Whiteside doesn't. Whiteside is a go-to scorer every once in a while when he's feeling it. When he's not feeling it, he's a negative. Bam Adebayo always seems to find a way to make an impact offensively, whether it's moving the ball or scoring like he did today, or really both like he did in that game. There was one play after a timeout where Bam Adebayo, they drew up the play for Bam Adebayo to get the ball on one end of the floor. He cut towards the rim. And I thought it was strange because he had the shot. He could have laid it up, but Miami was trying to get back into this game with threes. He found Wayne Ellington, who was curling off of a Dwayne Wade screen. So Ellington and Wade on one end of the court, Bam on the other end of the court is how it started. So obviously the defense is keyed in there on probably Dwayne Wade. And then secondarily, Wayne Ellington, they get the ball to Bam. He sucks the defense in because he cuts to the rim and then finds Ellington coming off that screen. And Ellington drains the three. He gets the score down to 114-112. And that was one of those plays that Spo drew up that got Miami into that game, or kept Miami into the game, I should say. But more importantly, it was drawn up for Bam Adebayo to be the main plug of the set. You know what I mean? Like, that is quite – like that says a lot about how much this head coach trusts their rookie, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, he's showing faith in Adebayo and his development this season and the growth that he's, you know, constantly demonstrating every time he plays. It seems like he does something better and better. Look, he did make a mistake in the closing seconds of the game. That's fine. Again, it's not that big a deal. I think overall he played a really, really solid game. You know, the fact that he played 25 minutes over Whiteside's 23, we had talked about it earlier when Barry Jackson wrote a piece about Whiteside and his struggling with his minutes and kind of not necessarily calling for more playing time, but being frustrated and wondering what his role is supposed to be. Well, you know what? The difference is Adebayo just gives a constant, consistent effort, and that's what Miami loves. I think that's what every team would love, and unfortunately that's the problem with Whiteside, is that you never know how engaged he's going to be from one second to the next. And more often than not, he seems like he's easily distracted or he's not necessarily focused on what he's supposed to be doing and not necessarily playing at a high level. His motor is not running at nearly as high as Bam Adebayo's is. So, you know, I think it was just another great game from the rookie, and he's been very, very impressive. I know that I've seen some people talk about where Adebayo ranks among the top, you know, the top rookies of this year. It's tough to kind of gauge that because he didn't play much earlier in the season, but he's really come on as late, and I expect him to continue developing throughout the last month or two of the season.
And, you know, we didn't mention this on the show yet, but Miami did quite a bit of switching against Toronto in this game, more than they usually do, especially when Whiteside's back there, and he tends to, you know, they play conservatively when Whiteside's in there and they sag back, but they asked Whiteside to switch more just because Toronto's guards are such a threat, and it didn't work. I mean, Toronto still had their backcourt, Lowry and DeRozan, still had a great game. But Bam played more minutes partly because he is more switchy against teams like Toronto. And then if we look back even to Miami's game against the Boston Celtics in December, Whiteside didn't play that game. He was dealing with an injury. But Bam Adebayo started that game next to Kelly Olynyk and had a pretty good game for them too. Miami won that game 90-89, if we recall that. So against the top two teams in the East, Bam Adebayo is having a greater impact than Hassan Whiteside. And I think that speaks to not only how good Bam Adebayo has been as a rookie, especially on defense, but again, just where the league is going right now. as far as demanding that your fives are able to switch onto the perimeter and defend guards one-on-one in certain situations. Bam Adebayo is just simply better than that, than Hassan Whiteside. Again, I don't want to beat around the bush here, but there just seems to be a future of this team with Bam Adebayo starting at center. It just seems to make sense.
Yeah, I agree.
That's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of Miami's game in Philadelphia. Thank you to Draft. Use the promo code LOHEAT and get a free entry after you make your first deposit. And check out our Twitter account at Locked On Heat for instructions on how to join our league and play against us during tonight's slate of games. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions or comments for our recap against the 76ers using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.